is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud.
Please don't politicize this virus. It exploits the differences you have at the national level. If you want to be exploited, and if you want to have many more body bags, then you do it. If you don't want many more body bags, then you refrain from politicizing it. The unity of your country will be very important to defeat this dangerous virus. No need to use COVID to score political punches. No need. You have many other ways to prove yourselves.
Well, you hear the audio clip here of Dr. Tedros from the World Health Organization. And as he speaks out and says, don't politicize this. And of course, but that many would say that's exactly what Tedros has done in regards to China. And interesting, and let me read you this quote. The Chinese government is to be congratulated for the extraordinary measures it has taken to contain the outbreak. China is actually setting a new standard for outbreak response, and it's not an exaggeration, he says. Well, that was obviously offensive to a lot of people who understand what really happens here. I want to talk about that a little bit here and all the top stories. A lot going on here, friends. Michael Johns is here, and Michael is the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement, a former White House speechwriter and a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. Ava Armstrong joins us. She's a political commentator and radio personality here at America Out Loud. She's a great author, and as all of our books from all of our experts are on the America Out Loud bookstore or directly on Amazon, friends. You get those links right back at AmericaOutLoud.com. So we're talking about the World Health Organization, and this is a good place to start, guys, because this was a lot of where this thing got politicized with China out of the gate. And there's a lot here. Now, let me, as I just read you that quote a moment ago, that Tedros come out and talked about China, giving him a pat on the back. Well, listen to this here now. Peter Baker of the New York Times tweeted that Trump has found a new villain for the coronavirus pandemic. John King of CNN said that Trump was in search of a scapegoat. And the Guardian newspaper described the president as an increasingly frantic effort to shift the blame. That's called frick, frack, and frock there. The Times, CNN, and Guardian. So you've got, that's kind of a setup there, but that's what people are hearing out there. Michael, the fact that he had these comments about China, and of course the president hit back on this, what's going to become of this whole thing with our relationship with the World Health Organization?
I suspect what's going to become of it is that once we're through this crisis, we're going to have a fresh assessment of what this organization is, what our participation level in it is, what reforms may be necessary, and what its role is in global public health. I don't think anyone objectively could look at the World Health Organization and conclude that it is been impeccably managed or a hugely constructive force in this current coronavirus pandemic. I don't think if you went back and looked at their management in Ebola that you would be particularly impressed either. So, and I've made the point that I think that really as they become increasingly absorbed and obsessed with some of the climate change issues, some of the public health focus has diminished. And, for instance, they'd done some great work with smallpox and some other things earlier. So what's going to happen, I think, is a fresh look at the World Health Organization. They've got their supporters in Congress.
I want to come back to the budget and the funding in just a moment here, but let me just give you this little piece of information, Ava. So Politico, this is interesting now. They come out and they say, blaming the World Health Organization and China is not scapegoating. And the headline caught me because you never see a favorable headline from Politico, almost hardly ever. And in reading into it, they say, without China's deceit in the World Health Organization's solitude for Beijing, the outbreak might have been more limited, and the world at the very least would have had more time to react to the virus. China committed unforgivable sins of commission, affirmatively lying about the outbreak and punishing doctors and disappearing journalists who told the truth. And that's kind of what the president said, actually, Eva, because he said, President Camerato said, fortunately, I rejected their advice on keeping our borders open to China early on. Why did they give us such a faulty recommendation? Of course, they didn't like that, so they kicked back. But wasn't that interesting with Politico there?
And you also have to realize it was January, and the World Health Organization was telling us that this was not transmissible from human to human. They're outright lies. And this is something that you don't need. I mean, there's a breadcrumb trail here, you know. You can see what the WHO was telling us, and you can also see what China was telling them. And it's all lies.
What do you think's behind this? I mean, this is not an easy question, but what's behind this thing with the World Health Organization and with Tedros and China, rather, Eva? Do you think there seems to be, and I think that's what the president suspects, is there's some funny business with this relationship?
Oh, there's definitely something going on. I mean,
What do you think it is? Any idea?
Oftentimes there's money being exchanged, you know, for these types of favors. I'm not sure. But all I know is China lied and a whole hell of a lot of people died. So
there it is. Yeah, China lied and people died. I guess that would be probably an interesting phrase, Michael, for the moment here. Let me talk to you about real fast the budget on this thing. So President Trump's suggestion to reduce the budget, the funding, was interesting because as I read here, the White House budget request for the fiscal year 2021, so coming into next year here, he had already suggested to cut it in half even prior to some of this, because you know how he is, Michael. He doesn't like to waste money as a whole. I mean, and we applaud that, clearly. But he was going to already do that with Congress and as they were allocating the agency's budget here from roughly, listen to this now, these numbers, $122 million to less than $58 million. And one other point here, among whose 194 member states, the United States remains the greatest contributor to the agency's $4.8 billion budget. So far more than China puts in. There's only a minuscule of that amount here. So I think this is going to be a day of reckoning coming right now pretty quick with WHO and how they butchered this thing out of the gate, I think is going to be the big thing we're going to have to look back at, Michael.
Issue with the World Health Organization funding is very comparable to what it is with many multinational institutions, including the United Nations itself, in the sense that we provide a significant portion of the funding, and our influence in the direction of these institutions, including budget reforms, policy reforms, common sense, and a lot of times is, you know, limited. And it points to, I think, the broader point that the president subscribes to, and many of us conservatives have subscribed to for decades, of the limitations of these multinational institutions.
That's it.
You know, as far as Tedros goes, I don't think he should be too much of a mystery. I mean, when he came in 2017, mm-hmm. I think a five-year term, he's not a physician. His management as health minister in Ethiopia was mediocre at best. Mm-hmm. He was backed substantially by China. He wouldn't be in this position were it not for the execution of China's political influence within this organization. And that gets to the broader point, is that China's political influence within the World Health Organization is certainly disproportionate to its funding, but even if it weren't, it's simply disproportionate, period. And that is that it has an agenda that it's been utilizing, and it's aggressive, very aggressive geopolitical, geostrategic plan that this is one component of.
Yeah, it is. It is really interesting, people, how, and I really applaud the president for putting this out in the public consciousness. A lot of people talked about it in a negative way, as I read to you earlier with some of those media clowns. But really, the president, like always, gets people to think. You know, Michael, listen to this now. One of the things that I think is really important we touch on here as well is the models in all of this, okay? So the models were initially talking a couple of million people dead here in the United States. I mean, they were well over 2 million, and there were other models that even showed more than that, quite frankly. But even the more conservative models were a couple of million dead. And so at this point here, it's really under 20,000, which again, and I know there are a lot of comparisons out there to whatever, flu or mosquito bites or, you know, horse racing, I mean, whatever. I mean, I get that people are dying from all kinds of things. But here's the question, I think, and this is a hard one, actually. The fact that these deaths are way down like this, do you believe it's the social distancing that has been working, as some have suggested, or do you think it possibly could be that the numbers that were put in the models to begin with were very, very flawed? There's a lot of evidence that leads toward that. What do you think?
I'm going to subscribe to an all of the above thesis here. I think the models were flawed. In the sense that you have people who had experienced symptoms, who had recovered, who had never visited a healthcare institution, were not included in that. And thus, as a percentage, the mortality rates actually, are vastly lower than projected, particularly in you're using, any of these models, but I think the data out of China was unreliable to start with. The European data was a little more reliable, but still had that problem. And then the social distancing, well, of course, yeah. I mean, it's a contagious disease. And, if you're not going to acquire it if you're in isolation. And yet we know the cost to our economy and our social structure of the country has been, really, decimated as a result of that. I don't think too many people would dispute the thesis I'm about to say, and that is that we have certainly not underreacted to this crisis. The president has not underreacted.
No.
You know, the travel restrictions, the social distancing guidelines, the vast amounts of support for our public health care institutions, the block grants into the states. He's taking this incredibly seriously. Yeah. There's no disputing.
You know, that's a great point you just bring up, Michael, because I think he would have been accused of exactly that, what you just said, as far as if he had underacted it at all. Now, there are a lot of conservatives and a lot of Americans, actually, who believe he has overacted, the president, potentially, and they're just saying enough to close this whole country down. Abel, I think you might be one of those, or I know a lot of people are very insecure about this close down. And I want to say this. One of the comments I got in here from a listener here was, and comment on this, because it plays to what Michael is just saying and what I mentioned in here. Has the garbage coming out of the Corona expert models finally taken us where the progressives want us, herded together like conditioned herd animals, our minds controlled by psychological manipulation? What do you say to that?
It's not too far off the mark, really, when you think about it. President Trump is really in a no-win situation. That's always been my view of this. No matter how he reacted, if he overreacted, then they will criticize him for that. If he underreacted, which I think was what they were planning, I think he would have been highly criticized for underreacting. So it's really being in between a rock and a hard place. And it's really a tough call for him because he was dealing with the World Health Organization, which is very slanted toward China. And he was also dealing with unreal models. I mean, they weren't accurate at all.
Moving forward and coming out of this thing is not going to, I was just saying moments ago, actually, it's not going to be an easy thing. People think, well, we'll just turn the switch and we'll all go back out tomorrow and get back to business as usual. I mean, we have literally closed the entire country down in a way that we have never seen in our lifetimes, for certain. Probably has never happened like this. throughout our history of our nation. It's unbelievable when you look at what's taken place. It's a historical moment in the nation here. Well, Nancy Pelosi comes out and she hints at a depression. And I'd like to play this a quick recording for you right now. Listen to this here.
Well, that we could have a depression because so many people are out of work. And that's why we have to get the system really energized and working. Let's get out those unemployment checks. Let's get out those direct payments. Let's let these get these loans freed up. Let the banks be the friends to this whole system that they are. This is an era of entrepreneurship like none we've ever seen before because of the challenge to small businesses. Let's recognize what that is. That optimism is to America.
So there's a couple of interesting things I take from that. Nancy Pelosi, she did that on the CNBC with Cramer there, the Mad Money program, and that was an interview she had, which was quite something to look at or listen to. But I find it odd, a couple of things here. Number one, her version of entrepreneurship, when she celebrates that in there, is government money rolling out to everybody, which I did not get escaped from me. It's funny how her whole version of capitalism is far different than most of everybody listening to this program, I am certain of that. But I think the other amazing thing is that she talks about, well, yeah, we could have a depression. I mean, you know, Michael, I got to tell you, I get a really suspicious feeling with all of this. And I have had it, as many listeners have and Americans have had from the very beginning, where they have clearly this political fight. They've been hoping and praying for some kind of a recession. Now she's saying, well, we could be in a depression. And the other thing I think that's not lost on all of this is the money they're spending. They're like kids in candy shops running around and they can't help themselves. It's like, woo, another few billion over here, a couple of trillion here. And these people are just on some sort of version of crack money of some sort. Michael, what do you think about Pelosi's statements and how she responds to this as far as the depression goes?
It's immature, really. I mean, I listen to it and I try to, you know, a lot of times you hear individuals on the left and you sort of say, well, that's, you know, an intriguing theory, but it's wrong on these policy grounds. Hers is not even, I don't think it's really even comprehensible. I mean, for one thing, you know, what is an actual depression? You have to have a decline in gross domestic product 10% or more. This president has had growth in every quarter of every year of the last 3 years. So we have not even put up, I'm sure the first quarter of, you know, we're going to see some numbers that are in the negatives, but we haven't even had the two consecutive quarters that you would traditionally associate with the recession. And then you're looking at, you know, usually that sort of climate exceeding 2 years. So it'd be inconceivable definitionally, if these definitions matter, if these words matter at all. I'm not sure this political dynamic, if they do. But, you know, if the actual contextual reality of what a depression is matters, there's no way you would be in a depression until 2022. So I understand the political instinct of wanting to say that the sky is falling, mm-hmm. and also to want to imply that somehow the president has not has some share of blame in this, which I believe he just the opposite. I think the economic impact on this country would be grossly worse were it not for the expeditious steps that he took and that the Fed took independently to shore up these capital markets and whatnot. I think it's been generally constructive. And, you know, it's just the political talking point of we want to see you know, the country failing, so that can be our talking point in the 2020 election.
Ava, they're talking about a phase four here, and I want to talk about that next. But Speaker Pelosi comes out, and she says the next coronavirus stimulus bill should include at least $760 billion smackaroos over 5 years for water projects, broadband, transportation, plus another $10 billion for community health centers. That's probably abortions at Planned Parenthood, potentially, who knows, and for housing and education. Of course, we know where all that goes as well. As a way to strengthen, she ties all these projects, Ava, to the economy and the U.S. infrastructure, rather. She calls it the infrastructure. Well, it is infrastructure in your mind if you have a socialist agenda. I can understand that leap. But other than that, most of the stuff that they're already lining up to be in this bill, this phase four, has not a darn thing to do with the coronavirus or with probably even this infrastructure, which they've been speaking about. They're also seeking additional funding for, let me give you this here, supplemental nutrition. Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, which is food stamps, by the way, which obviously the president has reversed those trends. Now they want to blow those up again. And also, oh, let me give you this one, as well as emissions restricted on airlines. So if they're going to give the money on airlines, now we want you to, restrict your emissions. I mean, you can see this thing, it becomes like they've been doing. And then pension protections and hazard suits for the mosquito control environment and God knows what else, Ava. You see what's happening here.
The thing that really struck me about Nancy Pelosi's little speech that she gave about the economy was how giddy she was about the demise of our good, safe economy that we had, when this all came about. There are things to worry about, and this overspending, this overreach by the federal government is completely unwarranted, uncalled for, and we should be very careful going down this road. JP Morgan now sees the economy contracting by 40% in the second quarter and unemployment reaching 20%. This is something that's a very real threat to our country. And we will not solve it by spending more money. That is not how this will be solved.
President Trump put a tweet out there. With interest rates for the United States being at zero, this is the time to do our decades-long-awaited infrastructure bill. It should be very big and bold, $2 trillion, and be focused solely on jobs and rebuilding the once great infrastructure of our country, Phase 4. Now the president, knows we need infrastructure. Sure, we've always needed it. We've needed it for the last 30 years. And yet they have ignored this. Now, all of a sudden, we got a pandemic and we got to take everything in your brother, stick it in the bill. And by the way, let's build an infrastructure now. And the president knows that. Maybe he's taken the opportunity, or is he, I would ask you, to say, okay, I'm going to get rid of the politics and I'll work with you, Pelosi and people, even though I know this is wrong. Or is he spending too much and are we in trouble, Michael?
Firstly, remember that the president in 2016 ran on the $1 trillion infrastructure plan, which was broadly supported. And was one of many reasons that he was elected. And then for 2 years, Paul Ryan stalled on it. And for the last year, roughly, there's been this partisan divide that's made it, I guess, inconceivable. So in my judgment, that should have been something that was executed in the first 2 years, probably in the first year, in fact, of the Trump presidency. There's no denying that we need it. That is, I guess, a subjective statement of someone who's been all over this country. But if you want an objective statement, the American Society of Civil Engineers, which ranks infrastructure in countries around the world, most recently ranked the United States a D as in David plus, D plus. And so if we're going to do that now as part of this coronavirus response, fine. In my judgment, it should have been done immediately. As far as the debt and deficit go, restoring sufficient capitalization in these markets is crucially important. It was crucially important in 2008, 2009, too, but it was done very poorly back then. And in that, as you correctly said, it was kind of like in many ways, inspired our National Tea Party movement. This administration's learned a lot of lessons from that, and you overlook the details if you jab this president on that issue, because a lot of those lessons were applied in the way they went about the repo, the conditions, the limitations on executive pay raises, a lot of constraints that were not in place in 2008, 2009 that are in place this time that I think are to his credit.
There's actually a nationwide poll done that says they need to dump Joe Biden. That's the words they used, by the way, for a Cuomo and get the New York Governor Cuomo in there. That's their words again. They want to dump him. So the nationwide poll says this, Ava, 56%, and this is decent here, of likely, and this was a wide polling sample, by the way, 56% of likely Democrat voters said that they would like Cuomo to be the Democrat presidential nominee rather than Biden. 44% said that the former vice president should be the nominee. So 56-40, but that's some pretty staggering numbers there. We've been talking about a Hail Mary at the last minute, Ava, for some time, and we've speculated who that would be. I don't know. There's something here, you think, or not really?
I think it's doubtful. Bernie bros are very upset, and they will probably vote for Trump. And Biden is Biden. I mean, what you see is what you get, and I think the Democrats are very, very disappointed. So I don't really think Cuomo's going to jump in. I don't think there's going to be a contested convention. I thought that early on, but I don't know.
Well, not now, because Sanders, I mean, it's really just Biden left there. Unless something happens on the floor, they are very doubtful. Bill Gates, they're saying, running for 2024. These are serious comments from people who understand the politics, that the real smart people that got the money already have given up on 2020. They know it's not going to happen. But they're shooting for 2024 because it's the after Trump thing that's going to be the next big hurdle here. What do you say to all that, please?
Whenever you spend a lot of time around political figures, as Bill Gates has done, you quickly sort of assume that you can do it. And there's a line when I worked in the House of Representatives, that every member of the House of Representatives wants to be in the Senate. When I was in the Senate, every member of the Senate believes they can be president because they're interacting with these people that say, hey, he's no real different than I am. Well, there's a lot different, really, frankly, in national leadership. This is a very special job and it's very difficult. As far as Cuomo goes, you know, I spent a lot of time in the fall of 2010 up in New York State, in upstate New York, Buffalo particularly, and I felt optimistic about the possibility of defeating Cuomo in that election. And I went a good amount of support to Carl Paladino's race. And I handed him, before his Hofstra debate, a few lines that I'd written out that he didn't use. But this gives me, I think, my first opportunity to say what they were. And that was that you know, he was in the Obama administration as a HUD official. And, you know, it was basically, you know, as a HUD official, you oversaw the largest housing crisis in our country that set off a global recession. As Attorney General of the state of New York, you've overseen the most corrupt political state in our country. And now you come before the voters of New York and ask for a third opportunity. And the answer is no, sir. I thought it was a really compelling line. And he didn't use it, of course. But the more you learn about Cuomo's background and his political and policy failures, the less appealing he becomes, not the more appealing he is. He's appealing now because people are catching these daytime news conferences, and he's admittedly folksy and relatable. And then, you know, look, the Bernie Sanders base is really dogmatic, and I think they see a lot of things in Joe Biden they don't like. And I think definitionally what Joe Biden stands for, aside from personal and political ambition, is kind of questionable at this juncture. It's not clear to me that he's communicating anything that's really terribly compelling to the American people. And if the president is able to navigate us through this coronavirus storm, as I believe he will, and he's able to kind of, you know, have a national victory, you know, throw out the first pitch, Major League Baseball type thing, where he brought the country through it, mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a very compelling candidate in November.
Yeah, that is interesting that you say that, because even throwing the first pitch out, you kind of have to look forward to that. I think Americans, you know, another thing is we will probably have learned some lessons from this, I hope, this moment in time. And the country, the nation has been scarred badly. In fact, that's one of the things I want to talk to you about next, friends, is the scars of this pandemic and what are the long-lasting impacts of it. And some people would say this was potentially a trial run for socialism. Interesting. And there's so much going on out there. A tremendous thank you here always to Michael Johns, Ava Armstrong. Let's continue on with Viewpoint. We'll be back in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. I believe there's going to be some long-lasting scars from this pandemic. I mean, this is not something we're going to get over right away. We don't just flip a switch and we're all healed and better tomorrow. Let's have a conversation next about the scars of this pandemic and you know, the attempt to reshape American society. This is a big talk here, something I want to really discuss with you here and dive into here. There are some interesting things happening here. I'd like to start this. We have a panel discussion coming up next, but let me start the conversation first with Lieutenant Joseph Pengero. You know, Lieutenant Joe's on the platform, Chasing Justice. He's a host of. He's a retired police lieutenant, director of school security, and is a great voice and writer here, columnist as well. He's got a great article up on the platform. I encourage you to absolutely read "Potential Violence Related to the COVID-19 Crisis." It's a great read, as all of our, I mean, just amazing articles on the platform here. All right, Joe, here's the thing. Many people are asking me, there's a lot of strange things going on. Let me give you a couple of examples. Governor Cuomo is quoted as telling citizens, now is not the time for large religious gatherings of any kind. People are questioning about this being Easter, Passover weekend. And, you know, I mean, people want to celebrate their belief, their faith, and, you know, many leaders have come out and said that. More so even than that, Joe, is a lot of local districts, cities, communities, towns have taken some major precautions and major steps, actually, even more than they're arresting people for doing the strangest of things. And it's, I'm just seeing a lot of reports of these starting to trickle in. And I'm just wondering right now, some of these people having some of their belief systems, I wonder if they can help themselves when you have so many from the left that want to socialize America to begin with. There's another one in Beverly Hills, California, for instance. The officials ordered people to wear face masks whenever they're outside in the city, or they'll be arrested or fined or whatever the hell it is. What do you think about all that, Joe?
I think it's a little bit of an overstep, Malcolm, on the part of many of our local governments in an effort to try and do everything they can. See, this is, unfortunately, this is a political virus as much as it is actually a health concern. The reality is, if you get this virus and you have a potential to be very sick or die, that's a reality. We know that it's everywhere. It can affect our older populations. And I think the governments, local, state, federal governments, are all trying to do everything they can because they want to protect their population. But the other side, if you don't do things and it goes one way or the other, there's going to be blame, there's going to be finger pointing, and the ugliness of politics is going to jump into this. That's where I think we're seeing now with the decisions to restart the economy or not. You have people jumping in saying, don't dare do it, don't lift anything yet. And other people are going, wait a minute, we got to save our economy or we have no country. So I think the overreach that we're seeing is an overabundance of caution and trying to use political power to prepare themselves for what's coming up.
Yeah, there's a lot that's going to be coming up, actually. I think people are getting really uncomfortable with this. And Dennis, we bring on Dennis Santiago, who's an American strategist focusing on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Dennis is one of our big voices here and a weekly writer, columnist here on the platform as well. Attorney General William Barr, I've been following him. He's had a couple different interviews, actually, this past week. Barr says that the states have very broad police powers, very broad powers that the federal government simply does not have to regulate the lives of their citizens. As long as they don't, here's the caveat to this, Dennis, as long as they don't violate the Constitution. And then he says with a wink in the eye to Lord Prabhupada, you know, we'll be keeping a careful eye on that, you think? And here's the problem, is a lot of these local municipalities, these cities, towns, communities are really full of a lot of left Democrat type people. And not to take, you know, anything away from a blue dog or a moderate or a basic Democrat, but the party that's gone so far to the left right now, that a lot of these people are looking for a socialized America, quite frankly, Dennis. And I think, are these times giving them sort of a petri dish of opportunities here to really, you know, hold back our civil liberties? And what's the long lasting impact of this, you think?
There is definitely an experiment in government control. We are living right now in an America that is composed of 50 individual states where the governors hold almost absolute power at the moment because it's an emergency situation. And as much as people want the federal government to be more involved in it, the way this emergency system is set up, the federal government sits in the background, as the Attorney General said. So here's the thing about this. Yeah, you see a lot at the beginning at the state level and in some states like Michigan, where by next week you are not allowed to go from one house, one residence to another. In the city of Manhattan Beach in California, you are not allowed to assemble in a group greater than one. You know, essentially, two is a banned activity.
Wow.
So it's to Joe's overabundance of caution, this is hysterical caution. Is what's beginning to happen. And you should expect that in this type of situation, because these people are trying to top themselves day by day by day, because that's what, it's the human nature of it. The thing that I get the most out of this is how Americans are very, very patient in times like this about things, and will put up with essentially the loss of their constitutional rights for a period of time in the interest of everybody else.
I think there's been a lot of patience, to your point there, an enormous amount of patience. And quite honestly, Dennis, I'm shocked. I'm surprised that there has been things have been. In fact, I want to congratulate people as far as, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of real problems with crime or outburst or, I mean, I'm sure there are some things going on, and I'm sure Joe can speak to that. But I've been very pleased from what I've seen so far. But to the point that they're taking it too far, let me bring on here Susan Price. And Susan is an investigative researcher, a patriot, a veteran advocate, Gold Star mother, a great voice, and a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud. Susan, I have to say, on the point that we're talking about right now and that you hear Dennis, I'm starting to be really alarmed here. And, you know, I'll give you an example here on several fronts that make me concerned. You know, abortion shops are open. You can get an abortion in New York City with no problem at all. They're considered essential to get to murder the kid. And yet the gun shops things like even your salon. And of course, we need to keep a beautified America. We don't want ugly people walking around, Susan, you know. Both are real important, gun shops or salons, exactly. And both of those are non-essential. They're closed. You can't get your hair done and you can't go buy some ammunition, but you can go ahead and murder the kid, which kind of really begins to question what your values are in society. What do you think of all that? Because there's a lot of strange things going on right now.
Well, Malcolm, both the gentlemen on this call are absolutely right. But I want to add something else. We know there's deep state has been waiting this whole time, licking their chops, thinking of new ideas and ways to get Trump out of office. And this is an important year with the election, as we all know. But, you know, we know that the Democrats, they're ruthless. And a lot of them are, I'm going to say it, they're downright satanic and Luciferian in the things that they do with releasing criminals during a time such as this when criminals are already quarantined. They're just adding chaos. But they're also, these deep state people are also working with people like the UN, who's working with the WHO, who's working with Bill Gates and the mandatory vaccination program. So this is a holy war, definitely, and there's more going on. And remember, and by the way, John F. Kennedy was killed trying to get rid of the Fed, and that's exactly what Trump's doing. Trump is doing everything wonderful and good to heal our nation because of the criminality going on with the trafficking and the cartels, and without alerting Americans to how bad it is, he's trying to keep some level of peace and calm.
Joe, back to what Susan's just talking about, and she mentioned the Gates thing. People are concerned. He's got this mandatory vaccination program he's trying to put out there. In fact, the Attorney General Barr came out, and he actually talked about this, if you can believe that, Joe. He said Bill Gates' proposal for COVID-19 vaccine certificates that they're trying to develop a digital certificate to certify that American citizens have an immunity to this virus or other viruses going forward to be used with travel and work, etc. And then, Joe, there is this ID 2020 program, which I think most listeners are probably catching on to by now, where they really want to make it mandatory to ID every living, breathing DNA character who is here on the planet here with us, and then vaccine everybody and put that through a system. Joe, I'm starting to get the feeling that we're going to be walking in lines with our arms up, and we're going to be saying, talking to ourselves as we, the biometrics scan our eyes and we walk through the door in some futuristic movie that we might have watched 25 years ago and thinking, here we are.
Malcolm, you're certainly onto something here, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist kind of person, but I can see that government will take, if you give them an inch, they'll take a yard every single time. If you give people the opportunity to think about things and come up with solutions, they will often take the most radical solution. And I think, Dennis, you were saying it before, they got to outdo each other, kind of these things. Look at our, and this is going to be a little off the path, but we look at our judges. You've got a very conservative judge gets put on the court, and then they have time to think about their rulings, and suddenly they go off on this left-wing tangent because now they've thought about it so much instead of sticking with their principles. So I think we do have a concern here that, you know, we want to keep everyone healthy. I remember when I was a kid, we all had to go get the rubella shot, you know, the pumps, and they lined us all up and we didn't, everybody got the shots. Now, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Vaccines have saved us. We see what's going on with all the people coming to our country that it's not normal to be vaccinated in their home countries. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing the rise of diseases that we pretty much wiped out. Now they're back. Back in our
we're really starting to look like, I mean, this is as Orwellian as you can start to get there. And let me give you a couple examples, Dennis. Been reported to me that when you go into these grocery stores, that there are now arrows on the floor and they are now forcing you to walk down various rows, and there are people on every aisle. And then they say, well, we can't really force you. And it's like, that's kind of how they say it. They say, like, we can't really force you, like, yet, that is, Dennis, wink, wink. But we would really like you to follow. We are starting to look like rats in the local grocery store. And now they've got, of course, plexiglass up between the customers and the cashiers. And you think we're ever going to get back to any kind of a normal? Or I guess part of what I want to talk to you about, I get the sense we might be tainted here for long term. But isn't this going too far, some of this stuff?
So some of this stuff is, when people get scared, people start doing
stupid things.
Yes, some of it's stupid. Some of it not so stupid. I'm not knocking Bill Gates, all this stuff. I understand where the guy is coming from. And, he's basically trying to take an electronic version of a WHO yellow book, which, I have one that goes way back and records all your vaccinations. You used to have to present it along with your passport in order to travel anywhere in this world. Today, not so much. Given that people are worried about this kind of stuff, should you have the equivalent of your little yellow book to go along with your passport whenever you want to leave the country or come back? Maybe you should. So, I'm not knocking that. I also understand that in the world of where we are right now, that you got to stay 6 feet apart and all that kind of stuff, that to make it easier, are these grocery stores being mean and onerous and socialistic in what they're doing? Or are they just trying to help their customers by putting little X's 6 feet apart so that, people know where to stand and about where to go?
I just think we're going too far, Susan. I think we're going too far. And I think this is something listeners need to know. I mean, we're not idiots. I mean, I think these people are taking they're seizing the power, and they're now telling you, the arrows and stand out here and stand up there and put your hand on your ass and hold it there and we'll be with you. I mean, shut up.
Well, I will tell you, though, Malcolm, I myself don't wear the mask. I wear gloves if I'm pumping gas. And if I go into the store and get stuff, I don't want to touch the cart. But I really and truly believe that this is a manufactured crisis, and I don't trust Bill Gates. In fact, 95% of the people I know don't trust him. Yeah. We know what he's all about. We know these other two doctors that are on the stage with President Trump, and Trump has their number, he always keeps his enemies close. Fauci was paid $15 billion in 5 years to work for George W. back in 2002 to go to Africa and remedy the overpopulation control. However, everybody, it's going to play itself out. President Trump is really trying to get us back to normal. Yeah. By the 1st of May.
Well, we'll see. I'm just curious, Joe. I've never asked you this. Your belief system with Bill Gates, do you trust him? Do you have any comfort in him?
Well, that's a tough one. I'm listening to what Dennis says, and it sounds, sounds like he trusts him much more than I do. I think he's in a position where he is a world leader. He's no matter what we think about him, his position, his finances put him in that position. And I think he probably wants to do the right thing? And does he see that if we all get vaccinated and have proof of these things, would we be better off? Would we maybe, stop the next COVID-20 when that comes out? So I'm going to give him a 50-50 on this one, that he's like a lot of people on the left. They want to do the right thing. My concern with them is always that it's how they go about doing it. They have good ideas, but sometimes their implementation can be really, really short of how it should go.
Wow, love the conversation. Thank you here to Dennis Santiago, Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, Susan Price. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, HealthyCell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthycell.com/sleep.
Let me join you back here on Viewpoint this Sunday. It is a special weekend. It is a Easter and Passover weekend. And as I said to you earlier in the program, sending you the blessings of all and wishing you the very best, my friends, always. Speak about a very interesting article column up on the platform as well that I want to tell you about. And let's talk a little bit more about our faith and what's happening in society today with this pandemic. We'll do that now with Dr. Carol Swain. Dr. Swain is an award-winning political scientist, former professor of political science, and professor of law at Vanderbilt University. She's the author of 8 books, host of Be the People. Carol, I think more than anything else right now, people, as we've talked about earlier in the program here, people are experiencing changes in their life they never thought they would see in their lifetime. And they're wondering how temporary or permanent some of this is going to be and when we might get back to normal. One of the things I want to ask you first before we get into the actual article and all is, how do you think this pandemic is impacting and changing people, both the Christian community and even non-believers? What's your sense out there?
The good that has come out of it is that it has brought some families closer together. Probably in every neighborhood where there's been a shutdown, you see fathers outside with their children, with their wives, families doing things together. And so it's been a great opportunity for families, especially middle class and upper class families. I don't know what's happening in other communities, but people are out there spending time together. And I believe that there are more people who may have been raised in the church or exposed to Christianity at some point who are pondering these times. And it may result in deepened faith. Many of us have been praying for a revival in this nation, that we would turn away from such wickedness as a nation and move towards God. And that could come out of this pandemic as men realize that nothing that we've always put our faith in you know, such as our way of life, our constitution, some of us, our government, none of that is reliable.
There's a very unbelievable article that Dr. Carol Swain has written that you must all read, and you must share this with the world. And it's front and center on the front page right now at AmericaOutloud.com. It's entitled Revelation, the End Times Book of the Bible is Becoming Less Mysterious. So here's the thing. In this piece, you say America is a blessed but apostate nation. And you talk about charters, state constitutions, the Mayflower Compact, the Sunday Blue Laws. Now, some of you may not even remember the Blue Laws, by the way, but that's when, you know, that was a day of worship and you couldn't get into your stores and your department stores and malls and things of that nature. They were closed. And our system of justice, with its requirements for due process and the rule of law, speaks of the influence of the Bible. And you go on to say, Carol, our nation has strayed away from her Judeo-Christian roots, as you say, so much so that Barack Obama felt confident in 2006. And I want to say this to you people, because this is big. And this is just a moment in time for you to question it all. When he said, and I quote, "Whatever we once were, we are no longer a Christian nation, at least not just. We are also a Jewish nation, a Muslim nation, a Buddhist nation, a Hindu nation, and a nation of non-believers." That statement, Carol, I think was an absolute game changer for this incoming president when he was running at that time. Pretty amazing, huh?
I agree. And we know that during his administrations that there were a number of steps that were taken that really empowered non-Christian religions, and we don't have to go into detail about that. In 2015, New York City, the Empire State Building, that they had the building lit up with the face of Kali, K-A-L-I, the Hindu god. And so they were, and it's the god of death, and they were honoring this Hindu god in relationship to the environment. And so you think of a nation that with Judeo-Christian roots that would honor, you know, the god of death of another religion. And she's also considered the god of the feminists. Feminists honor this particular Hindu deity. So I think there's no, we shouldn't be surprised about all the things that are taking place in our country. And New York State, New York City, the epicenter of the coronavirus disease, it has more abortions per year than any other state in the union. And so they really have pretty much celebrated death.
I mean, that's a very prime example you give there, which I did not know, of the Empire State Building and what they did. And you say here, Carol, clearly the end times prophesied in the Bible are nearer now than ever before. Jesus told his disciples the signs to watch for.
In Matthew 24, Jesus gives the signs of the end, but he talks about those being like a woman about to give birth. And so, you know, when a woman is in labor, the pains start off, you know, they're sporadic and then they intensify. And we see everything lining up for the end times. And for many people, religious leaders even, who have believed and studied the book of Revelations, they could not understand how the two witnesses, I believe in chapter 11, how they could be killed and the whole world would watch them, you know, be tortured and killed and then be raised up to heaven. And then along came, you know, the internet and technology where we can see the same things at the same time through television and satellites. So that was one thing that had mystified people. And another was the mark of the beast. Like, how was it that they could say that rich and poor and, you know, great and all of these various kinds of people would not be able to buy or sell anything unless they took the mark of the beast? And now we have people saying that currency, paper dollars and coins, that they are full of bacteria, they cause disease, and that we should move to digital currency. Mm-hmm. And so what they have advocated is something like Bitcoin. So instead of us having paper money, all of our money and everything about us would be digitized. And we already have our health records digitized in the cloud. The technology is there for a microchip that some people have already voluntarily had inserted in them, where they could put all of the information about you, your health records, your banking records, all of that could be in a microchip on each individual. Bill Gates, I mentioned him, he has pushed, you know, for this digital identity called ID 2020, where every person, you know, in the world has a digital ID, a digital footprint. And this is something, you know, that the globalists would like to see happen. We see that occurring at the same time that there's a move for even greater surveillance of not just the U.S. population, but the world population. In other countries that have been communist or totalitarian, surveilling the population, that's not new. But in America, we have had our Constitution. We have had our Bill of Rights. What is happening right now is that the Constitution is being overruled by people who are in power, who totally disregard that, and who have talked about a world where there's no world power, where one nation doesn't dominate over others. And I would say that America has dominated because America has been blessed, and many of the people who came here sought to start a nation that would be the new Israel, that it would enjoy a covenant relationship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So they sought the same covenant as the Bible discusses with regards to Israel. So those were our founding fathers. They sought covenant. Well, that covenant has been long since broken. And our Constitution, at this point, it's not clear what it means because there's so many liberal justices in the Supreme Court. They've been educated at Ivy League institutions, and their view of the world is very different from the view of most of us.
What's your lasting message on this Easter weekend and Passover weekend to listeners out there? What is it, Carol?
The concluding part of my article says that even though we have this slowdown and this pandemic, that I believe that God has given us an opportunity to get our lives straight, that we can make choices, but we need to be aware of our times. So many Christians have lulled themselves into a false sense of security because they believe in the pre-tribulation rapture. They believe that they're going to be whisked out of society before the mark of the beast and things get really difficult. And I've always been a person that was a mid-tribulationist. I believe we would go through part of the Great Tribulation, those of us that are in America. And when it comes to tribulation, there are people in other parts of the world, Christians, that have been in tribulation for a long time. And so we need to realize that America has been a blessed nation, but America is apostate, and she can no longer expect to be shielded if she has been from the pain and suffering that other Christians suffer.
You're listening there, friends, to the voice of Dr. Carol Swain. I hope you'll take all of this information, these thoughts and ideas with you, and continue to have a blessed weekend. And it is a moment we all live and learn, and there's a lot to live and learn with also back at the platform. Let me remind you that Carol's article, Dr. Swain's article, it's probably the most incredible read. Revelation, the end times book of the Bible, is becoming less mysterious. This is a must-read piece, and you want to really grasp the message in here and understand it. I cannot speak any more than that about it. It's got a fantastic image on it. You'll see it right there on the front page. There is a lot to read and listen to and watch on the platform. I must point out this one other read to you from Ron Edwards, and it's called Sometimes You Cannot Blame Someone Else. It is an amazing piece to read, and it gets into slavery. Again, Ron, as many of you may know, he is a tremendous black conservative voice here, a terrific man, and he is a writer. And this piece will also speak to you in ways that others may not. Sometimes you cannot blame someone else. It's just It's interesting. It's an incredible read. I encourage you to read that one as well. You'll see that on the front page, as well as many others, right back at AmericaOutloud.com. Again, blessings be with you. Thank you again for being with me and being here on Part of the Journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.